Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. An interesting program dead ahead. Informative? Well, perhaps, perhaps not. We'll be discussing birds today. Let me tell you about our hypothetical guest. It's Rich Guthrie, a veteran birder, a former NCON specialist, and compiler of the Catskill, New York Christmas Bird Count for the National Audubon Society. Rich is our resident avian expert. He knows all about birds. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. He knows a lot about birds. Unfortunately, he's not here at the moment. But we expect him at any time. He'll be flying in and we'll talk about birds. But you know what? This is fun because this will be your chance to tell your bird stories. Now, I personally love birds. I like the red ones and the blue ones. Little ones, and then the bigger ones, the ones that eat other birds and the ones that eat fish. Birds are really quite wonderful, and that's my extent of my knowledge on birds. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to the phone, shall we? Merle in Argyle. Merle.
Hi, how you doing, Ray?
Good. It's all you, man. Go.
Yeah, it's all on me, and I got just what you were asking about, a bird story.
What do you got?
All right. Last year when I put up my tomato cages out in the garden.
Yeah.
I had, within a couple of days, a couple of cedar waxwings going after the old strings I had.
Yeah.
On the cages. And well, they were pulling, but they were all tied on.
Yeah.
So I went out and cut the strings, and the next day all the strings were gone. Well, this year I did the same thing. And I was sitting out on the back porch watching the backyard, and sure enough, two cedar waxwings come down onto the trestles, and one of them just sat there and looked at me, and the other one was pulling on the strings. So I walked over and cut all the strings, and of course I chased the cedar waxwings away when I walked over.
Yeah.
And then I walked off, and I was actually went out and did a little bird walk, and I came back an hour later. All my strings that I had cut were gone, except for one that I hadn't cut.
Wow. How about that? Pretty smart.
So the birds are teaching me that I got to go out there. If I put up my tomato cages, make sure I cut the strings.
Sounds like they're mocking you.
Yeah, they were definitely mocking me.
Well, you know what? I don't know. I hope that this story will have a happy ending, but it doesn't sound good thus far.
Oh, well, no, it had a good ending. They got all their strings that they wanted to build their nest for.
All right. Fair enough. Well, that's a great way to start the show, and heaven knows where it's going to go from here, Merle, but hang in there. Thanks for listening.
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551. Okay. Well, let's see what happens next. Roderick and Troy. Roderick, you're up.
Yes, I live in Troy in a six-story apartment building, and I'm on the top floor. And for the past several years, well, for 2 years, there have been nests of starlings outside my bedroom window that I've been able to watch. And I wonder if you've ever had a person on this program who liked starlings.
You know, I don't recall what Rich, I don't know if Rich is a fan of starlings, and I take it you are not.
I am.
You are?
Yes.
And why?
I wanted to make that clear, but most people are not, I think, because they are an invasive species. I've done a little reading on them, but not very much, but they are monogamous, and they're very well organized.
Oh, well, that's fair enough. And so you're seeing them this year and you're enjoying them?
I am. 2 years ago, I was able to watch the whole process, building the nest with both the male and the female participating. It seemed to me two different birds were coming, one a little bit larger than the other. And the hatching of the chicks, I could hear them. They're in a niche right outside my window, so that I can't actually see the nest, but they walk on the ledge right outside my bedroom window. It's close enough for me to reach out and touch them.
Oh, that's great. But you don't touch them, I hope.
Oh, of course not. No, I try to stay away from the window because it does discourage them. But I saw the whole process. I saw them when they took their first steps out of the nest, about half the size of the adults, and they they would walk along the ledge, flap their wings, and go out on flights for about a minute or so and come back and then walk and flap their wings. They were taking some experimental flights.
Oh, that's terrific. Hey, well, you know what? Enjoy that. And the starlings now, of course, I don't know this. Are they year-round or do they move on in the colder weather?
They're a winter bird, too. And they are, I want to say this, they're an urban bird. they don't build their nests usually in trees or frequent parks. They build them in the crevices of buildings as they did here in this case.
Well, you're lucky. You should take some photos.
Well, that's an idea. I don't like to get too close to them because they're curious in one sense. Sometimes, especially the young ones, will come in and look in the window. But when I get too close, they fly away briefly, but they always come back.
Well, I appreciate the call. Thanks so much for checking in. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, and a little birdie told me that Rich is about 5 minutes away and will actually be here. And in the meantime, let's welcome Larry Fetterman of the Audubon Society. Larry, thanks for pinch hitting here.
I'll do my best. I'm not Rich Guthrie. He's a friend of mine. I was hoping everything was okay with him.
I guess it is.
That's great.
Well, that's good. So let's take a call. You can weigh in, okay?
I'll do my best.
All right. Let's go to Mike. Mike, where are you calling from?
Saratoga Springs.
Mike, you're on, and Larry Fetterman is on with you as well from the Audubon Society.
Oh, well, hi. Well, maybe you can weigh in if I altered the space-time continuum with my actions. But,
okay.
We had a robin's nest in our backyard, probably built in a small pine tree, 20 feet tall, and they probably were new parents. So anyway, we were watching through our window as the babies were born, and then one day my kids and I happened to see one of the fledglings whatever on the ground, and you could see it was way before it was ready to fly. So the kids were begging me to do something, so I got the ladder out, put it back in the nest, and I could see the nest was not very well built, but there were a couple other babies in there, and I stuck it in. Hour later, there it was again on the ground. So my kids again begged me. So when I finally go, I don't know what to do. So I went in the house. I go, I don't know, I can't make a nest. So I found an old baseball hat. I shoved some pine needles in there and shoved the hat. I got back on the ladder and shoved the hat, like, right next to the, as best I could, to their existing nest. And what proceeded to happen was I saw the mom eventually go on there. And unfortunately, another baby fell out overnight, and that one perished. And then another baby must have got stuck in their nest and couldn't move, and it died.
Wow.
So, make a long story short, the only one that survived started taking care of the one in my hat, and we had watched her grow up and start flying around the yard with the fledgling and eventually became a young adult.
Oh, so, that's lovely.
I don't know if we did the wrong thing there, but the kids were happy.
What do you think, Larry?
You did a great thing. Whatever ushered this bird out of the nest, that you know, it's hard to say. But that's a great success story. You know, robins do make kind of sloppy nests from time to time, and the fact that it was in, you know, put the baby in the same area as the parents, the parents were able to locate it and take care of it.
And that's okay to intervene in these type of ways, Larry?
You were doing the right thing. You were keeping the baby near the adults. You weren't bringing it inside and trying to be the surrogate parent.
Okay. Hey, Mike, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Rich Guthrie apparently en route, and we're joined by Larry Fetterman of the Audubon Society here on the program, and our own Alan Shartok, who knows a thing or two about birds. Here's one now.
Number three, please.
Headphone three? All right, here we go. How you doing, Alan?
That was very funny.
Nice to have you here.
That was very funny when you said, there's one now. I was holding up three fingers.
Yes.
And you said, there's a thing or two about birds, and there's one now.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
Yeah, well, there you are. Nice to have you here while we...
I wanted to ask Larry a question.
Sure.
How do you, when a bird is particularly annoying, you know, in the morning, you know, wakes you up, has anybody developed a form of communication to so that we humans can speak to birds?
Well, Larry, what do you think?
I mean, we should
defer to Guthrie for this one.
We've actually got a cardinal out there who makes a hell of a sound.
Can you do the sound?
When he does it, I can imitate him. But
because Guthrie can do the sounds.
Oh yeah, no, that's him.
That's
him.
One?
That. Yep. That's definitely him.
Well, many birds will respond if you make the same sound, won't they, Larry?
No, the sounds are specific to each different
right.
species. You know, the cardinals this time of year, it's breeding time.
Yeah.
So he's busy proclaiming his territory. He's letting every other cardinal in the neighborhood and apparently everybody else know.
Yeah, Alan as well.
But I don't get it. I own the house.
Well, of course. He's a freeloader.
Well, there you go. All right, let's take one more call, and then we'll take a break here. Mary and Rhinebeck. Mary, you're on.
Hi, good morning. Or good afternoon. I was curious about, I have a hummingbird feeder mm-hmm. where the hummingbirds are coming to the feeder, and it's almost as though they touch the beak, their beak to the feeder, and then they just fly away. And I'm wondering maybe... I just haven't seen any hummingbirds actually feeding from it at all.
So maybe the food isn't good? Larry, what do you think?
That's a possibility. Are you keeping fresh food in there?
Mm. Well, by fresh, what do you mean? It's maybe been like 2 weeks, and I did buy, that was my second question, I bought one of those pre-mix syrup things that you just add water to. I also heard that the red dye actually weakens the baby eggs. Is that true? You know?
I'm not exactly sure what the problem with the red dye specifically is, but it is recommended not to use, you know, from the folks at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology.
Okay.
You know, we're saying not to use the red dye, just a mix of sugar water, one part of sugar, four parts water this time of year.
Mm.
I would say 2 weeks is too long to go with hummingbird
nectar. Okay.
You know, it starts to get cloudy.
Yeah.
If there's no red dye?
Oh, definitely. You go without the dye. The hummingbird feeders that you buy have some sort of color on them.
Mm.
And that's what's attracting the hummingbirds.
All right, Mary, we got to take a break here, but thank you for calling. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. What an interesting program it's been thus far. We're joined by Larry Fetterman of the Audubon Society, Alan Shartok, and soon to be Rich Guthrie, and of course your calls. More birds coming up.
Support comes from Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more, where eyewear is an art. Facebook or visionexceleyecare.com. And Rensselaer County Historical Society announcing Troy's annual River Street Festival, featuring over 100 artisan craft vendors, live music, and new this year, history walks. This Saturday, rchsonline.org.
Don't panic out there, everybody. Rich Guthrie's in the house. 1-800-348-2551. Nice to have you join us, Rich.
Hey, glad to be here.
Just flew in, and boy, are your arms tired. Now, Larry Fetterman, who is a friend of yours from the Audubon Society.
He is?
That's what he says.
Oh, okay. Hi, Larry.
Hey, Rich. Glad to hear you're okay.
Life is good.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen. Here's one from email. This is from Jim in Montgomery. How many feathers does a bird have? What is a group of owls called? Do birds get bored sitting all day doing nothing? Why did my pet bird suddenly die?
Larry, you're on.
That's a lot of questions, Jim. I don't know. Okay, that's a thumbs down. So I think what Jim was doing, and I hear from Jim from time to time in Montgomery, I think he was trying to help me fill time.
Oh, good.
In the absence of any expert guests.
Cereal.
You know, he was helping me out. And
yes.
Jim, I appreciate that, and your check is in the mail. Let's go back to the phones. Lynn in Shelburne. Lynn.
Hey, hi. Hi, Rich. I've got a question about a cowbird in the area. If a cowbird were in my area this year, and obviously... there he was, and I think I saw the female as well. Would that discourage my phoebes from even nesting here?
No. The phoebes have no clue what's going on with the cowbirds.
Okay.
And the cowbirds are very clever at that. I'm glad you brought that up, because right now is baby cowbird time. And I actually, a lot of people don't like cowbirds because of how they behave. And I think that cowbirds are one of nature's real marvelous miracles. The ability to be, well, first of all, what cowbirds do is they lay their eggs in somebody else's nest.
So they're like parasites to some extent.
They are a parasite, precisely. And they leave the raising of the young up to the foster parent. And they go away and be cowbirds again while their babies are being phoebes or song sparrows or chipping sparrows or yellow warblers. It doesn't matter. And then, and what's remarkable is that then the babies, after they grow up, they know they're not a warbler or a flycatcher. They're a cowbird. So they pick up the old habits of cowbirds without prompting, without education, without leadership. And I'll tell you another thing. I was just watching the other day a male cowbird hanging around where I knew a baby, a phoebe, was feeding a baby cowbird. And I said to myself, I wonder if that male cowbird is indoctrinating the baby cowbird as to cowbird ways.
You mean the baby phoebe?
The baby cowbird.
Yep.
The phoebe raising the cowbird baby.
I see.
And the cowbird sooner or later is going to have to know
that
not
a
to
cowbird.
Be a phoebe.
So no, there's no conflict there.
Right. It'd grow up a very confused adult.
That's very interesting.
So I'm thinking that the cowbird male is up there coaching, mentoring the baby cowbird in absentia.
That's fascinating. Lynn.
I know. I thought it was a bizarre thought, but you know what? Like starlings, I like starlings too.
You do like starlings.
I do.
So and you were listening on the right end.
I was, of course.
Okay, good.
I was trying to figure who's on.
Yeah, nobody at first, and then Larry Fetterman showed up.
And then we're here. Hi, Larry.
Yeah. All right, Lynn, thanks a lot for the call. Larry, what do you think? Are you a fan of cowbirds as well? I know Rich has sometimes strange tastes in birds.
All depends on the preparation.
Well, exactly.
No, I agree. It is an amazing evolutionary story, and they are a protected species, so one shouldn't take matters in their own hands as far as trying to keep them away from your neighborhood.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Let's go to Gene in Catskill. Hello, Gene.
Hey, Ray.
Oh, hi, Gene.
How are you?
Good.
I wanted to say hello to Larry Fetterman, too, who is known locally for taking the most wonderful bird walks along the Ramshorn Livingston pathways. It's just the most lovely sanctuary. And Larry takes people and teaches them about all the birds locally. But what I wanted to say was I make my own hummingbird nectar.
Oh.
And I just make it with sugar and water, 4 to 1. And I change it every 5 days. And I've got 2 hangers out and very happy hummingbirds. And they don't fight now because I've got the 2. In fact, at this very moment, I'm looking at it, and there's a female and a male, one at each feeder.
Wow. Is there any creature on Earth who doesn't like your cooking, Gene? That's the question.
Well, you are sweet. You are so nice and kind. I just wanted to mention that as I came up the drive just now, coming back from Woodstock, I saw a very large female turkey and about 6 babies trotting along the road, and then they were confronted by a rabbit. It sounds like Disney World, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But in fact, the rabbit stood his ground until the mother almost trod on him, and then he took off into the woods. But I thought that was very interesting that he thought that was some sort of an adversary.
Gene, are you foraging for mushrooms again and eating whatever you find? Because this sounds like a hallucination of some kind.
Well, you know, Jimmy Carter went through a similar thing.
Jimmy Carter found a giant rabbit.
Yes.
But so this is true. Now, Rich, you had mentioned that the turkeys were sort of, there were a lot of them, and then there weren't a lot of them for a long period of time. They're back in force?
They're making a good, strong comeback. And what happens, things are cyclical. You go up, you come down. It's a roller coaster ride. And last year was a bad year to be a turkey. This year it's a good year to be a turkey.
And apparently a bad year to be a rabbit.
Well, I don't know. He stood his ground. The
rabbits are no fun. I mean, I'm not fond of them at all. I love all the birds that come around, but the rabbits busily chew on all the best flowers, and particularly the Asiatic lilies, which they seem to wait for in the dark and attack before the light comes up. But anyway, I mustn't rove on like that. So thank you. I'm so glad that Larry is there to help you, Ray.
Well, I think I was doing just fine, Gene. I knew about the red birds and the blue birds.
Listen, you know everything. You're the best,
okay? Gene, thanks a lot for the call.
Take care. Bye. Bye.
Thanks for the shout-out, Gene.
1-800-348-2551. You see that, Larry Fetterman? A satisfied customer.
We aim to please.
All right. Rich Guthrie is here. Larry Fetterman is here. And you at home. And you can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org if you so desire. They will run it in. Tim in Guilderland. Tim, you're up.
Hey, I have a question for Larry and Rich that has been plaguing mankind for centuries. I spent most of my adult life in cities, and the question is, why has no one ever seen a pigeon's nest or a baby pigeon?
Well, never say never. I have, and I'm sure Larry has, and I bet you we could fill a busload of people who said they have.
Larry, have you?
Of course.
There you go. And
okay,
the thing is that they're rather secretive. They build their nest in an out-of-the-way place. They're not conspicuous in their nesting behavior, but they do nest. They do nest successfully. And it's just a matter, I think, of knowing where to look and what to look for. So, Tim, I think one of these days we'll have maybe go on a pigeon walk and check out where the pigeons are.
Yeah, that'd be amazing, because everybody I talk to that I've lived with in the city says, where do these pigeons come from? Where are their nests, and where are the babies? And so,
interesting.
Yeah, obviously it stands to reason that they've got nests and they have babies.
Well, the most familiar site will be a window ledge or under a girder on a bridge or some sort of horizontal shelf, typically high up, where you really don't have an opportunity to look down at it. You're generally looking up at it. So you're out of sight, but they're there for sure.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, Tim.
Thank you very much. Rich Guthrie is here and Larry Fetterman. And you at home, 1-800-348-2551. It's Barbara in Altamont. Barbara, you're on.
Hi.
Hello.
Rich, I'm saying hi to you especially. I interviewed you for my book, Feathers of Hope.
Nice.
This is Barbara Chapaitis.
Yes, right.
Hi.
Well, hi there.
And I was so glad to catch this today because I do have, you know, the weird bird events continue in my life.
Mm-mm.
And the last one was about pigeons. This is about pigeons.
Mm-hmm.
Here I am out in the country. We've got all the country birds. And suddenly I've got a flock of pigeons kind of storming my house.
Now, is this are they mainly urban? I mean, will they go out into the rural areas?
Normally, no. I mean, naturally, no. Pigeons are old world country birds. They were imported from Europe,
mm-hmm.
where over there they typically nested on cliffs, high cliffs, ledges.
Yeah.
And when they were imported back over to here, they moved. They found the cities to their liking. They liked the buildings. They liked the ledges. They liked the cliff-like structure of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an interesting phenomenon. They did move out of the city into the country, and where they out of reach of buildings and the like, they find bridges, highway bridges, creek river crossings. They like the ledges that bridges provide.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could be driving up in New York, the Northway, or in Vermont, going up the interstate, and where you'll have an overpass, there's probably a pair or two of pigeons nesting on the girders, way up into the Adirondacks, into the Green Mountains and beyond. So why they are in the country is the availability of food and nesting places. So they like barns, they like corn. And so when you have a cornfield with a barn, a silo, there are the pigeons.
And the pigeons are omnivores, more or less?
No, they're strictly grain eaters.
They will, but I've seen them picking, you know, on the street here, picking at pizza crusts and everything else.
Well, that's a form of grain.
All right, I suppose.
It's vegetarian.
All right.
But they will take, if you're down in, let's say, Bryant Park in New York City, and you have a piece of hot dog that you want to throw on the ground, if the sparrow doesn't grab it, the pigeon might. So they will take opportunistically whatever they can find. But their normal diet is grain stuffs.
Okay.
And the other possibility why you might have pigeons is a neighbor might have taken up the hobby of homing pigeons or racing pigeons. And they will fly around in tight flocks, learning the landscape, and very clever birds with a very strong homing instinct. And what they are doing there, you see this in the tenements in the city, too, where somebody will have a pigeon coop on the top of the roof, and you'll see a flock of 30 or 40 pigeons flying around.
Boxer Mike Tyson was famous for that.
Yes.
Back in the 80s.
Well, it's a very popular urban activity. Well, I shouldn't say that. There are folks in the country who have racing pigeons.
Barbara, you want to follow up?
I'm still curious. Are they bombarded? They're actually bombarding my house. They're like flying at my house.
Hmm.
Is there a reason why they're doing that?
Well, pigeons will get that. They are very strong direct flyers with an attitude. They're on a mission, and that's to go from point A to point B in a big hurry. And what they found you to be a very suitable point B.
Very nice.
Doesn't that just figure?
Yeah.
I just want to tell you also, we're very happy to announce that our bluebirds in our bluebird box did hatch out two babies.
Yippee.
And they've fledged. They're feeding them on our railing.
Well, there you go.
Oh, cool.
Barbara, you're doing all the right things.
Barbara, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you, Rich, for all your good work.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still with us, Larry?
I'm hanging in here. I love listening to Rich. He's the man.
Feel free to pipe in anytime you want here.
Pipe away.
Because the light isn't flashing. You're on the guest line. You know, it's not always easy to remember that you're there. But jump in whenever you want, okay?
Great. Thank you.
All right. Let's go to Cheryl and Troy. Cheryl.
Hi. I had a question about probably a week or two ago, over the course of a week, I fished 8 dead birds out of our pond in the backyard. This is in Troy. It's in the city. And I think they look like starlings, but I wasn't sure. And I wondered if these are just birds that somehow were trying to fly and didn't make it.
Could be. Let me ask you, are there any chemicals or pesticides that might be in the area that these birds might be attracted to or inadvertently ingesting?
Not in my yard.
No. Okay. And in the pond? The pond is...
Actually, this year, we lost everything in the pond because of the cold weather, and so the pond was clear, completely clear water.
Mm-hmm.
Had been sitting there... You know, it was city water, but it had been sitting there for 2 or 3 weeks.
Yes. Well, I find it very unusual that a bird will fly over water and fall into the water. It's just not mm-hmm. their nature. And even
this is not the first time. It's happened several springs. This is the most I've fished out, but almost every spring I would fish out 3 or 4.
Really?
They're not real small. They're fairly good size.
Well, hold on. Can I ask you if you don't mind holding on to one
sure.
or two?
Because oh, well, it hasn't happened now for a week or two.
Yeah, even so. If you don't mind, just double wrap them in a plastic bag and see if you can freeze them and let me know.
And who would be the person to contact?
Well, Ward Stone would have been, had he still been a state pathologist.
Yeah.
I don't know
yeah.
who has taken Ward's place down there, but that's the sort of information that... needs to be brought up the chain.
So you think that it's much too much to be coincidence?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, it's not. I haven't seen any for a while. It may be even next spring before it happens.
Okay.
Again.
Well, keep an eye out.
Okay.
It's very unusual. And just as for folks who do have a pond or a pool, a good thing is to lay a rope across it, a floating rope, so that if something does get into it. They can get onto that rope and maybe pull themselves out, work themselves out over the edge, especially if a swimming pool.
Brilliant.
Yeah, well, there was in some springs there's been a pot with plants in it, so you would think they might be able to get to that. But
how big is
I'll
the
remember
pond?
Next year to put a rope.
How big is the pond, Cheryl?
Oh, it's very small. It's like 5 feet by 3 feet.
Yeah, that a bird should end up perished in a pond that small. There should be there's something more than what meets the eye happening. That is my sense. Larry, any thoughts?
Are there any trees overhanging the pond? Could these
there
birds
is
have
a
fallen out?
Small lilac, and then it's in a corner with a wall and the garage.
So no,
no,
no.
But no. There's no large tree.
And lots of birds will build a nest over water just for their added protection. When the babies come out, they better be. Ready to fly.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a nest in the lilac.
No.
Okay.
Well, Cheryl, I'll provide my email address as we go to the...
You can go ahead and do it now.
It's my name, Richard P., as in Peter, Guthrie, Guthrie, at gmail.com. So it's all one word, Richard P. Guthrie, no spaces, no dots, no dashes. @gmail.com.
Now, could this be one of those situations where the birds were at the edge of the pond having a drink and there was a cat maybe? And
no.
No?
No. Very unlikely. I mean, that happens all the time. Birds just go to the edge of ponds and they fly away. You know, airborne is
part
of their
nature. Could there have been a predator nearby that maybe...
Even so. It, not to drive that many birds into a pond. One time,
yeah, it was.
Could, but six times.
In such a small pond, too.
Exactly.
Okay, well, Cheryl, most interesting call. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks.
Larry, have you heard of this sort of thing before?
Not around here. Not from that. You know, it sound, if this is a cyclic event, then there might be somebody in her neighborhood who, in the springtime, is applying some kind of pesticide fertilizer, something that these birds are getting into.
And this is unfortunately something that happens.
It happens, and it shouldn't happen. If the person is using it according to directions, it should not happen.
And then once the bird gets it, it's more or less into that food chain anyway.
Exactly. Goes right up the food chain.
And that's happened so many times in the past. All right, let's take a break. Zach the engineer, 1-800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. More on The Bird Show coming up.
Support comes from College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com. And Old Sturbridge Village, an 1830s New England living history museum with costumed historians, working farms, hearth cooking, demonstrations of traditional crafts, and more. OSV.org for events and details.
See how much easier the show is to do when there are guests. It's quite wonderful.
And now we're double teaming.
Rich Guthrie is here and Larry Fetterman of the Audubon Society here as well. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Bill in Latham. Bill, you're on.
Hey, Ray. How you doing?
Good.
Hi. I live in Latham area, and behind me is probably about maybe, we'll say 10 or 15 acres of woodland. And every time about this time of year, I hear wood thrush come through, all right? And I'm wondering if they're just transient in the area. And to tie into what Alan was talking about earlier, about nuisance noise in the morning.
Yeah.
I actually heard, we have a lot of mockingbirds in this area, and I actually heard the mimicking of it this morning, which was pretty amazing. It must have impressed the mockingbird enough to say I've got to repeat it, but I was going to ask, you know, either that to Rich or to Larry, is it just, are they transients or are they, like, south a little bit, like maybe down towards the Normanskill or something like that? What's the deal with that?
Well, they are a resident nesting bird species. A resident, I mean, they're up here typically nesting this time of year, migrating to South America for the winter. The wood thrush is one of those, and Larry can elaborate on this a bit if he likes, is one of those bird species that we are keeping a very close eye on because
Why?
The numbers are declining drastically, dramatically.
Everywhere or just moving to a different spot?
Everywhere. Distribution-wide decrease in their numbers.
Okay.
And they're a beautiful sounding bird.
They're one of my favorite sounds in nature. Larry?
Yeah, they're suffering declines due to destruction in their wintering habitats, and as our eastern forests are maturing, we're not providing a balanced forest for the birds. We're embarking on a demonstration forest project at our one of our sanctuaries, Rhinestrom Hill Sanctuary in Columbia County, where we're going to try to get back to a balanced structure of an understory, a midstory, and older trees, because we find that when birds don't have a mid-level 5-6 foot tall shrubs, a place for fledglings to hang out, they can be predated upon by other birds, by some of our raptors,
or other predators, fox, raccoons. So they're getting hammered, the wood thrush and the suite of forest birds. Mm. You know, at both.
I think they're the most. I mean, I remember, you know, being a kid and hearing them like up in the Adirondacks when I was up there on canoe trips and such. And there's nothing more wild than that sound. And it's just you just educated me, Larry. That's a wonderful thing that you got that targeted forest there to do that. The other thing is, I heard that there was like a Merlin program at the Cornell University. I think it might have been Rich that mentioned that at a previous broadcast. How easy is it to get that, Rich? I think if more people hear a bird like this, you know, they realize, wow, you know, this is threatened, it might have more of an impact. I don't know. How do you feel about that?
Well, I thoroughly agree. Knowledge and appreciation go a long way to aid in the conservation of these birds and their habitat. And the habitat, as Larry points out, is a very critical component to their survival, not only for finding food, but also for successful nesting. And as far as the Merlin program is concerned, that's an app that Cornell University has to offer. And you can find it by going to the Cornell Lab of Ornithology.
Okay.
And scrolling down and look for the various programs that they have to offer. And the Merlin is a very useful educational tool for the individual.
All right, Bill, thank you very much for the call. Let's go over to Dave in Del Mar. Dave, you're on.
Yes. I live in a neighborhood with mature trees down here. And a number of years ago, I put up three owl nesting boxes because we hear screech owls every once in a while. I thought, you know, it might actually promote more of them in this area. Well, you know, I put the boxes up, and the only thing I got were squirrels. And I now hear pileated woodpeckers quite a bit, and I'm thinking of putting nesting boxes up to replace the ones that fell down. But is there any way you can, is there a box or a nesting kit that will, you know, keep squirrels out and, you know, keep the whole, so, you know, they because they basically gnaw the hole bigger to make room for themselves.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know of any successful way of keeping the squirrels out of the nest box specifically. The boxes themselves, if you line the bottom of the box with some pine needles or wood chips, not cedar chips, but let's say white pine chips or something alike, mm-hmm. That will encourage the owls to nest. They like a little bit of furniture in the house, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I would not be discouraged. The size of the nest hole of the opening is... for screech owls is not critical as it is mm-hmm. for some other bird species.
Right.
And the pileated woodpeckers, I don't imagine will pay any attention to the nest boxes.
Mm-hmm.
They part of their courtship routine is for them to build their own house every year. So,
okay.
The other question I had is because I have so many squirrels in this area, I'm trying to figure out why we don't have more red-tailed hawks.
Oh, we
in
do.
In a suburban setting like this.
Well, I've seen many in Del Mar, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I think we're almost at saturation when it comes to red-tailed hawks in this area. I think they've.
But not in my yard.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. But they are plentiful in Del Mar and the Slingerlands and the areas around there. Even to the point where they're nesting on city buildings in downtown Troy and Albany and the like. So they've occupied. They've pretty well taken up all the available preferable sites, and now they're going to secondary, less desirable sites and being very successful at that, too.
All right, Dave, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye now. So, Larry, how do people find out more about the Audubon Society?
Very easily. Audubon New York has a website. We have a Facebook presence.
What is the Facebook presence, or can't you remember?
Oh, boy.
You didn't. You see, you filled in, but you didn't come prepared. I see. All right, I'm not going to give you a hard
time. How about Audubon?
I didn't want to overstep Rich's authority there.
Well, right. No, not at all. Go for it. Audubon.org. That'll
right.
get you there.
All right,
Audubon.org will get you to National Audubon, and then you can get to the state program.
All right. Well, Larry Fetterman, nice to have you with us here. Let's go to the phones again. Chris in Leverett. Chris.
Oh, hi. My niece from New York City was visiting last week, and she was fascinated with my bird feeder, especially the hummingbirds. So I gave her my Stokes behavior book, and it shows all those patterns that they fly.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were watching them, I think the book actually said you don't know if these are just aggressive or whether they're mating. And then my niece called and said, they're on the ground. And there were two hummingbirds on the ground mating.
Oh.
And well, it said in the Stokes book that was very rare to see.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, definitely. The two of us looked at them, and there they were.
That's Donald and Lillian Stokes, the authors of the books on bird behavior.
Yeah.
Several different volumes. Each one of them worth reading.
They are wonderful.
Yes. Well, that's very...
You saw a rarity.
Indeed.
Yeah, it was great.
Well, now you just wait for the babies to show up.
Aww.
Keep the bird feeders going.
I wonder if they went out to dinner first.
Is there any place you can look for the nest?
No, don't bother.
I say that
for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's virtually impossible. You saw a rare enough, and to actually find the nest itself,
Woo-hoo,
that's a whole nother dimension.
Yeah.
It's a tiny, tiny, it's a thimble-sized thing, roughly speaking.
And we also read in the book that once the males mate, they go off and find another girlfriend.
That could very well be.
And let the female. But who is watching that, right?
Yeah, right. Who's, no telling.
Free love among the hummingbirds. Well, Chris, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
A great call. Larry, what do you think of this very scandalous behavior from the hummingbirds?
She was lucky to see that. You know, just thinking about catching any of our birds mating, it's just a fleeting moment. We watched a pair of pileated woodpeckers just in our yard. Female arrived and the male flew in. They made a couple of greeting sounds and mated for a couple of seconds, and then they were gone. And apparently, and they'll repeat that over and over again. So she was very lucky to observe that.
Well, I'll be darned. That's quick. Jenny in Glenville. Jenny, you're up.
Hi. I'm really, really interested in this whole mating ritual because I had a cowbird, I think, who fell in love with me.
Aww.
And I couldn't get a yellowfinch or a cardinal, but a cowbird fell in love with me.
Nothing personal, Jenny, but...
I felt like it was. But anyway, I had a window box filled with flowers, pretty colorful flowers, and a cowbird came along and started stomping them down. It's right outside my big picture window, kitchen window. And so I came up to the window, and when I came to the window, he fluttered his wings up at me. And then he kept going up and down the window, fluttering.
Mm.
So I went out of the kitchen, and then he started stomping the flowers again. He pulled them up literally and threw them out. I came back in the kitchen again with the wings. Well, this was unusual, but what was most unusual is that he did this for 3 months. More unusual is he came back 2 years in a row.
Now, Jenny.
Yeah.
Are you sure this was a cowbird? Let me ask you that.
Positive. Yeah. I love birds. I love this show. Yeah, it's a cowbird.
Okay.
Brown head, black body, very pretty.
Well, you're on it. Well.
Yeah. It's a cowbird, and he. I looked it up, and I saw something about the way they go about trying to attract the female mating. Well, this bird, we named him Brucey, and my grandson came out by the window box when he was there and could stand directly next to it, and he didn't move.
Well,
he just stayed there. It was like he was chained.
Well, it's unusual in that usually that kind of window bumping behavior has nothing to do with you. It's all about him.
Reflection, you mean?
Yes, that reflection thing. Well, Jenny, if you like it to be, let me explain. That cowbirds don't usually engage in that behavior, so something else stirred them on. But typically, that kind of behavior is a result of the reflection. And
I thought that, too. So I did it on a rainy day. I kept going in and out. He only did it when I was there, when he could see me.
Well,
so I tend to disagree with you a little bit. Because
well, that's okay.
I like it.
I like it when you do that. But on the other hand, that window bumping is usually a territorial male. And cowbirds, because they don't build their own nest, do not establish their own territory.
So they don't usually do that.
So males have no interest
that.
In that rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it actually was you after all. Now, here's another part of the theory. Maybe somebody, who knows who and when, raised a baby cowbird
Right.
Much like that fellow earlier with the robin.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that cowbird learned to like people as, but even so, an adult cowbird should not be interested in having somebody else feed it.
That's
really weird.
I do have weird pheromones.
Ah. Jenny the bird lady.
You know, I'm not sure if I'm happy that he was attracted to me or not.
Oh, I'd be happy if I were. You know, the cowbird's got pretty good taste, let me tell you.
Well, this has taken an odd turn. Jenny, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Larry, what do you make of that one?
I don't think I should. We should probably move on.
All right, then. Let's go to Nikki in Saratoga. Nikki, you're on.
Yes, hi, Glenn. Hi, Rich. Rich, I don't know if I had an unusual sighting, but in about the end of May, I have had a whole bunch of indigo bunting. Am I saying that right?
Mm-hmm. Indigo bunting. That's correct. Yes.
Yeah, I have never seen them here before. Is it like rare or?
Well, indigo buntings are beautiful, beautiful blue birds, all blue, mm-hmm. with shades of darker blue towards the head.
Okay, little or big birds?
Tiny little things.
Okay,
little
all right.
Buntings. And what happens, Nikki, is that in the springtime, for some reason, they show up at bird feeders in the backyard, and
okay.
then they disappear. They
yes,
go off
they
into
did.
The woods, and
yes.
They're not uncommon. But they're harder to see when they're not in your backyard at a bird feeder.
Oh.
And
But they are beautiful.
Now, you can know when they're around if you're driving a country road with your windows down and you listen for their song. Now, I can't imitate it.
Oh, come on, Rich. Oh, you got to imitate it.
I'll do a mnemonic for
all right, Carly.
Okay?
Yeah.
Indigo buntings typically have a double-noted song. They're two notes, two notes, two notes, two notes. And it sounds like, are you ready for a fun mnemonic?
Yeah.
Fire, fire, where, here, here, see, see?
Fire, fire, where, here, here, see, see?
That's generally the gist of the song of the indigo bunting. Much, you know, nice high-pitched musical bird sound with that doubling of notes. Fire, fire, where, here, here, see, see?
You want to give? You want to give it a try, Nikki?
Oh, no, I don't even want to do this, but it was really nice to see him, and I hope today back next year, too, maybe in spring, just for a short time.
I think so, too. If you keep the bird feeders out in early May, keep an eye out for the indigo buntings.
Thank you, Nikki.
Yep, and keep looking.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Keep looking, Nikki. We had our indigo buntings show up on May 4th this year, and typically we had the same experience as you. They would show up and then disappear. We've had them showing up almost every day now, in the later afternoon, and there's, as Rich said, they are singing in our yard. So they'll, you know, if you're lucky, just keep watching.
Now, Larry, is that completely uncommon, or is that something that will happen from time to time over the years?
I think it's a case of happenstance. I just happened to be watching the feeders at the right time.
Okay.
And if for those folks who stop feeding birds after winter, keeping a feeder going through the summer. The bear issue aside,
right?
Have a way of coping with that. Summer bird feeding can produce results like Larry has, and that's part of the fun.
All right, very interesting. And very quickly, Lynn and Shelburne, I'm sorry, you have about 30 seconds to pose your question.
Okay, I've seen indigo buntings this year for the first of my life and bluebirds, but what I wanted to ask you, Rich, is about the seagulls that seem to be turning into McDonald's gulls.
Yeah, that's typically the ringbill gull, and they love McDonald parking lots. It looks like the blacktop looks like water from the air.
This is not good, is it?
Oh no, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's they're omnivorous birds. They're opportunistic feeders, and they like, you know, what's not good is that people throw the scraps out, making them available.
Yep.
That's not the good part.
Yep.
So it won't hurt them.
No,
happy meal on occasion.
They're more happy.
Okay. Well, Lynn,
thank you so much.
Thank you, Lynn.
Larry, once again, really appreciate you stepping up when it appeared that Rich was AWOL, and thanks for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
And once again, Rich, what is your contact information?
RichardPGuthrie @gmail.com.
And what's the blog? The blog is quite good.
Oh, the Times Union.
Yeah.
blog.timesunion.com/birding. And this year, this current one is all about the jackpine warbler.
All right, beg your pardon? What's the jackpine warbler?
Check it out.
Okay. And it's Times Union, blogs.timesunion.com.
Correct.
/birding.
Birding. Or you could just go to the Times Union, go to the blog, and scroll down for the birds.
All right, Guthrie. I hope you show up on time next time.
Let's see what happens.
All right. Thanks again, Larry. Support comes from the Chazen Companies, providing environmental permitting, engineering, surveying, planning, and landscape architectural services throughout the Northeast. ChazenCompanies.com. And the Sembrick, Bolton Landing, New York, presenting the Young Performers Showcase with local and high school and college musicians June 14th at 2 p.m., sembrick.org. Yeah, that's it. Interesting program today.
Thanks
to everybody for calling in. Thanks to the great Zach Malloy for running the controls. Anonymous Sandy answered the phones. Thanks to Ian Pickus for helping us get Larry Fetterman on the phone right at the very end here. And Jessica Blaustein Marshall, our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Make sure you download our new app. It's great for the streaming audio, the headlines, the podcasts, and more. Just go to the iTunes or Google Play App Store. Search WAMC at install tomorrow. Tomorrow's a Food Friday, and it's all about barbecuing and grilling. And I got to tell you, I probably won't be able to sleep tonight. It's going to be exciting. So we'll see you then.